Hi, and welcome to this week's podcast from Tales from the Doghouse, Separation Anxiety Explained. I'm Sarah McLaren and I'm from the UK, and you can find me at Separation Anxiety Solutions, and I am with
Stacey Bell from the US. I am at Focused Fun. You can find me at on Instagram and Facebook at Focused Fun Dogs. My website is focusedfun.net.
And I'm Ness Jones. I'm from Separation Anxiety in Dogs Decoded, and I'm in Australia, and you can check me out on Facebook. Ladies, before we get started, just want to mention next week, as a celebration of our 21st episode, that we are going to be giving our loyal listeners a we're going to let them ask us some questions, and we're going to be answering them. So if you have any questions regarding separation anxiety, please do reach out to one of us on one of our, via email, our websites, or our Facebook pages, whatever it is, and ask your questions, and maybe just mention it's for the podcast, and we will do our best to answer them next week. And today we are talking about hyperattachment in dogs. So firstly, I think let's do a definition of hyperattachment so people know what we're talking about. Go.
Go. Teacher question. Who's ready with a description? Hyperattachment. The attachment to one person. Or maybe two sometimes. But it's a significant person, or one significant person, as opposed to just being afraid of being alone. It's when one particular person leaves the home.
Yeah, so it could be a family or something, and maybe they get especially attached to the primary caregiver, who is usually the
mum.
Yeah. Because mum is the nurturer, and mum does all the feeding,
mum
and
rocks.
Walking. Mum rocks, yeah. But it's not always the mum, but yeah, often it is.
Yeah, so what makes it super tricky is that dogs that struggle with hyperattachment are not like other separation anxiety dogs, where they're okay as long as they're with anybody. These dogs must be with their one or two special people. So it makes managing absences kind of tricky. So I was just going to, given that, what are some ways that we recommend to clients to make managing absences easier for dogs that are hyperattached?
We need some find some other significant others. God, there's too many others in that sentence. So if you can, one of the pieces of advice we give to our clients is to share the love.
Yeah. I think that's a big one. And honestly, when somebody brings a new puppy home or a new rescue, I always say, share the love. You know, you do that as part of just bringing your puppy or your new dog home to try to avoid this hyper attachment, because I kind of do see that a lot in rescues, at least. So what do we mean by share the love? What are some things that we can do to share the love? I think another way people talk about it is like, it takes a village. You know, we see that with kids a lot, is that getting other people involved in their care.
Yeah.
So sharing the love.
Sharing the love at home is probably to do with other family members, isn't it? So getting other members of your family, if you've got other members that live at home, is getting them to exercise the dog or to play with them or feed them. And grooming and fun stuff as well, more fun stuff. So things like teaching them tricks, or even if you've got a local training class now where, you know, we can go out again and things, maybe if the other party takes the dog to a local training class and has a you know, fun there, that's a nice way to
just taking them for a walk or something.
Yeah, so what I try to do is ask my clients, what does your dog really enjoy? You know, is it fetch? Is it tuggy? Is it a game of chase? Is it fun training stuff? You know, those are the things that you want to try to get others to do with your dog. And I think it also helps when you're thinking about who can be a part of this village or group of people to help with your dog, just increase their circle of trust. Think about people who can be in the picture for longer, right? So don't invest, because relationships take time to develop. You know, don't invest in relationships with people who are going to be temporary. That's not to say don't introduce your dogs to those people, but like don't put all your time and effort in those relationships if it's not going to be somebody that's going to be around for a while or who will be able to take part in helping you manage absence with your dogs.
I think we did talk about doggy daycare last week, and I think maybe that is something that might help a dog with separation anxiety, provided they're comfortable there. With hyper attachment, because yeah, they can learn to be independent of the owner.
Yeah, but also those dogs usually struggle.
Yeah.
At daycare, yeah. Because they're not people that the dog is familiar with. So
yeah,
if your daycare has, you know, maybe on Tuesdays Becky always works, well, maybe Becky would be open to meeting you guys at the park a couple times before, or maybe she's also a dog walker, or, you know, just trying to kind of think out of the box, how can we get your dog more familiar with Becky or Richard?
Becky's the best.
I just love Becky.
So
to make
here's
that
a question.
Transition easier.
Yeah, for sure. So here's a question for you. Teacher question coming up. Do you think having a dog with hyperattachment and obviously separation anxiety, do you think that is a harder fix than having a dog that has separation anxiety but does not have hyperattachment?
For sure. Yeah. Just purely and simply because it's harder to get other people to look after. Well, not harder to get other people to look after them, but harder to get them to be happy with other people. Because some of them are, you know, I mean, there's hyper-attachment and then there's hyper-attachment. There seems to be different levels of it, where some dogs are, you know, are okay with certain people. So, you know, they might be all right with the odd member of family or something, but other dogs are just like 100% fixated on that one special person. But like, we didn't give birth to them, so we know that they can form attachments to other members of a species that's not necessarily their own. So if they can form an attachment to one person, then for sure we can help them form, well, maybe not attachments, but we can help them form relationships with other people that are fun for the dog, or you know, less traumatic.
It's very, it puts a lot of pressure on the person who the dog is hyper-attached to, though, doesn't it?
It really does. It really, really does. Yeah, I think it's just, in general, harder to keep them under threshold. So then that brings up the question of medication, right? So if I have a dog that is hyper-attached, then that is usually one of those factors that I would encourage a client to more seriously look at medication if they're not already on the medication, if their dog's not on the medication already.
Yeah.
The other issue is a lot of dogs with hyper attachment, it's possible that they live in a single person home. So spreading the love and getting other people involved in its care and, you know, whatever that looks like, whether it's feeding, walking, playing, et cetera, is a lot harder because sometimes or quite often they don't have anybody to fall back on. So that in itself is also a dilemma.
Yeah, and really isolating, just like a lot of pressure to know that your dog is unhappy whenever they are without you and just really isolating.
So what would you suggest in that respect? Doggy daycare, pet sitter?
I think that's where pet sitters come into their own on compared to daycare. If you can get someone who comes round to your house, particularly because you can get them to come around when you're still there and hopefully help the dog build a relationship before you ever get around to a point where you're leaving them with somebody.
Yeah. I also think that, you know, taking time to build the relationship, like Sarah's saying, before you leave is important. But then once you do leave, not leaving for 8 hours that first time. You know, let's take it slowly.
So what you're saying is like if you were going to get like a dog walker or a pet sitter, you wouldn't just say, right, come in, I'm off now. It would be a case of, right, let's come in, you come in and we'll sit here for, you know, however long it takes while you're there, firstly.
Right. Yeah. So while you're there, you can kind of step back a little bit. You're still there as kind of a secure base for your dog. Your dog can then be playing games, or the person can be feeding them tasty stuff, or just chilling out. I mean, I think it's another one of those things that you really have to go at the dog's pace, right? So if the dog, in addition to being hyper attached to you, also has a bit of stranger danger, then this is going to take longer.
Yeah. Mm.
But if your dog is just hyper attached, then, you know, then you can kind of make that transition a little more quickly. But bottom line is that you have to go at the dog's pace, and relationships take time to build.
Yeah. And you've also got, well, like you said about taking that step back, you've got to learn how to take a step back, because as difficult as hyper attachment is, and as distressing as it can be, I think there's always going to be that tiny little edge of it where it's like, you know that your dog absolutely adores you and you are the center of their world. And sometimes letting that go can be quite difficult, even though you kind of, you know that in your big girl pants that you really want to, but it can still be hard.
Or big boy pants.
Yeah.
Or big boy pants.
Yeah, any kind of pants.
and when we say take a step back, we could be like quite literal about that. So you could actually go for a walk with this person, and then you might initially have the lead, then you might be walking side by side, you could hand the lead over to the other person, and then obviously over time you could literally take a step back and like let them take the, you know, like just kind of fade out of the picture a little bit.
Yeah. Or if you're working from, or if they're coming into your home, you could do the same thing, you know, sitting on the sofas, talking with each other, them playing with your dog. And then eventually you can move out of the room. And, you know, if you're working from home or whatever, you can start working from home while they're still with your dog. And then maybe they can take, you know, move up to taking your dog out for a walk. Sometimes being on a walk all together and then you separating out, I mean, that can be hard for any dog, like even a dog that doesn't have separation anxiety. So, you know, that's just something to gauge and look at and see what's easiest for your dog, whether it's easiest. A lot of times it's easier for the dog to leave you than for you to leave them.
Yeah.
So having somebody come to your house, pick up your dog, and then go for a walk is a good option.
Yeah. And that's sometimes, I mean, it's something that I sometimes ask clients to test out, is where somebody takes the dog for a walk and then they leave to go for, you know, wherever it is they're going to have an appointment or training while the dog's actually out of the house. And for a number of dogs, they coming back and finding their significant other gone is not as bad as actually seeing them go. But some dogs, it's the other way around, isn't it? So it's about, for some things, it's about testing it out.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What works for your dog.
What do we think of, like, mat training or giving, I know that there's some advice about giving treats, long-lasting chews, Kongs, that sort of thing, kind of away from you when you're home, you know, just as a way to build independence in general. What do you guys think about that?
Yeah, I mean, if it helps the dog, why not? We're not saying to use it for separation anxiety training per se, as in you're not there. You're talking about when the owner is there, aren't you?
Yes, yep. I am.
Yeah.
Yeah, for
do
sure.
Do you think it makes any difference?
Well, you know, I don't think that it honestly would make a huge difference in home alone training. But if the client is feeling smothered by their dog, and some people are fine with their dog, like I'm talking about, like the dogs that, you know, and some hyper attached dogs will follow you everywhere and some won't. So I'm like talking about, you know, the ones that just are always like on you, move when you move. And some people find that so frustrating, right? And so if somebody finds that frustrating, then I will work on mat training with them just to give them a little relief from that and work on some maybe, you know, treats away and that sort of thing. But as far as home alone training, do I think any of that stuff transfers?
It's not going to hurt, is it, to put it that way? No. I mean, it's one of those things that it might not help, but it certainly won't hurt.
Right. And so that's my big thing. It's like, because we're always trying to streamline training, because we don't really know if it helps, then I wouldn't use it for like normal clients, only clients who are feeling frustrated with their dog, like being up in their space all the time.
Yeah, because you don't want to put your eggs in the wrong basket, do you, either? Especially if you've only got a finite amount of time and energy to do the training, or, you know, you've only got so much, we've only got so much bandwidth, haven't we, in order to do anything. So if it starts eating into the time that you would be better served doing home alone training, then yeah, I would leave it out. Yeah. But if it's, you know, if it's something that you can fit in and it won't hurt, then yeah, I don't see any reason why not.
That's a good point, actually, yeah, because, I mean, the training itself takes time. So if you have to add that as an extra element, it could be overwhelming, I guess.
Yeah. And it's also, like, one of those things is because for people with hyper-attached dogs, they're also going to have to be putting eggs in the share the love basket. So they'll have the home alone training and the share the love. And then, so, like, do we want to put mat training and treats away from you on top of that? And it could be that the mat training would suit other training issues that they're having. And then in that case, fine. But, you know, so I think you really have to look at that on an individual basis and not just say, yes, that's definitely part of it.
With the separation anxiety training, and probably if you paired with that with the share the love, I mean, often we find that the dogs become less Velcro anyway, so they are able to be a bit more independent around the house. And I have had clients say to me, you know, my dog follows me everywhere, and, you know, I can't even go to the toilet without, you know, them in there with me, or have a shower, they get upset. And then they start doing the separation anxiety training, and then they're reporting back saying, oh, I was working from home, I was sitting on the computer, my dog's normally by my side, and now it's gone off into the front room and it's all by itself. And they're like, yeah, I'm just completely amazed. But it is bittersweet for them, because they're like, I'm so pleased my dogs are, you know, able to be in a different room than me. But they're also saying, oh, I like having my dog by my side. But they're happy, but it's bittersweet.
Yeah, I think so. And I do think once you take that fear of being left, like, so by managing absences and doing the safe absence training, you take you're taking that away. You're taking that off the table.
Yeah.
So I do think that really decreases vigilance in general. And some dogs don't follow as much once you do those things. My dog follows and he doesn't have separation anxiety. So
same.
You know, there's always that.
Yeah, same. I mean, I've got the three of them here and, you know, they always want to know where I am because, you know, it's usually a party. If, you know, they're wondering when the next party is, I should say. So, yeah, but they're not hyper attached and they haven't got separation anxiety.
That's another one of those quite common myths, isn't it, with regards to if your dog follows you everywhere, that's a sign of separation anxiety. And quite clearly, you know, there's two of you sitting there who've got dogs that follow you around without separation anxiety. Mm-hmm. So, you know, even if it was only anecdotal, that's two of you. So,
So another option is if your dog is on a daily medication, or maybe even if they're not, is to use situational medication if the dog has to be, say you have an appointment or whatever, to use situational medication to help them cope with being watched by somebody else. So that is something to speak with your vet or vet behaviorist about.
Have you ever heard of a dog being hyper attached to another animal, as in another dog or a cat or even something else?
No, not me. No. Have you?
No, I just thought I'd ask.
I don't have any clients this way, but I've certainly heard of others having clients where and this is more of an exception than a rule, but when they are alone, they cannot cope. But then when they are with their dog that they grew up with, another dog, then they're okay. Or having a dog that passed away and then that triggering separation anxiety. So maybe in those cases, it would be something akin to hyperattachment.
But that could also just be separation anxiety. It's not necessarily hyperattachment, though, perhaps. I'd just be interested. I'll maybe if any of our listeners have any evidence or any stories about that, we'd be interested to hear. Let us know.
Did somebody mention that their horse had separation anxiety? I think I've heard that.
Yeah.
From a person or from the rest of the herd?
I'm not really sure. I mean, I should imagine that they'd get pretty twitchy being on their own because they're not meant to be on their own, are they?
I mean, I think that's very typical for horses to be not okay with being alone, you know, just because they're a prey species and the herd gives them more safety. Yeah. So I think that's relatively common for them not to be okay. I don't think I've heard of a horse having separation anxiety from a person, but I have had experience with horses. I mean, not as clients, but just I used to have horses and not being okay on their own.
Yeah, that's interesting. And I have heard of cats that have separation anxiety, but cats are very independent animals. Like they're not like horses, are they? They are probably more used to being solitary, yet they can apparently, and like I've never spoken to anybody with a cat that has separation anxiety, but have heard that anecdotally that they can get it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wonder about them. We're going down a deep, dark hole here. Parrots, I could imagine that parrots could get separation anxiety from a person because they become very attached to significant people, don't they? Anybody does parrot behavior, you can tell us all about that.
Polly, I would think the treatments would be pretty similar. It's just being able to read the body language, which would be, you know, the tricky part, I guess, depending on what species it was.
But Stacey, I know you've got a client with a dog, and I think it's one or two cats, and the cats go and mm-hmm. sit by the door as well when the client's doing the training. Isn't that yes. correct? So do the cats yeah, have separation right. anxiety, or are they just being keeping the dog company?
Or getting in the way?
You know, in that particular case, it was really funny because the client and I were both, you know, a little surprised by the cat's behavior because they did all of the things that, you know, we get a little bit concerned about with dogs, you know, depending on the dog and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, they would go to the door and they would sniff right underneath that crack, and one of them would paw at the door, and we were like, Jesus. And she felt really bad. She was like, all this time my cat's been suffering, you know, but now the cats are fine. So I think it was maybe just the novelty of them going in and out of the door yeah. that had the cats more interested. But it was really funny because in the beginning, the cats showed more interest in the door than the dog did. And we were like, what the heck? But yeah, so it turned out to be okay in this case. But
I've gone down the rabbit hole. I'm sorry. I'm now on the internet and I'm just... parrots with separation anxiety. I get the feeling from a very short bit that I've read that there's just as many myths in the parrot world with separation anxiety yeah. as there are with dogs. That could be an interesting speciality. Right, I'll get out of that rabbit hole now.
I'll send any bird clients I know of to you. Do we have any other tips for our listeners about their hyper-attachment dogs and how that changes traditional home alone training?
I think the other thing that I just wanted to touch on was the least worst alternative. Which can sometimes help with clients with hyper-attachment, because it's always we always think it's a case of being, you know, best case scenario being that they're never left alone, worst case scenario being that you have to go out and go to the shop somewhere. Maybe somewhere in the middle of that, there's a least worst scenario where they can be left with certain people and it's not too bad compared yeah. to being left alone where the yeah. world ends.
Yeah, so that's a good point. I call that second best because it's clearer in my mind. But so just thinking about the people who are available to watch your dog and kind of ranking them, right? So
yeah.
obviously you're number one and being totally alone is last place. And then like, how do people that are available to watch your dog, whether that's, you know, daycare, dog walker, house sitter, friends, family, how do those rank in the middle? And then
hierarchy yeah. of sitters.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so just to sum up, if you have a dog that is struggling with hyper-attachment, your biggest line of defense is going to be to share the love. And that is basically just helping your dog form relationships with other people. So that's doing the things that your dog loves doing, but with other people. So that's your first line of defense. Another is to speak with your vet about medication. If your dog is not already on medication, now might be the time to look at that more seriously. Situational meds might also have a place. Then you also want to look at kind of rate your, what is the best case scenario for your dog, which is being with you, and then rank other options as far as management goes, and then, you know, try to use those top two or three options for your dogs when you need to be away from them. Remember, next week we are taking listener questions, so please do take advantage of that, or you know us, we'll make stuff up and go down rabbit holes. So please do take advantage of that awesome opportunity. Again, I am Stacy with Focused Fun. You can find me on Facebook and Instagram at Focused Fun Dogs and at focusedfun.net on the internet.
And I'm Sarah McLaren, and you can find me at Separation Anxiety Solutions, and you can find me on Facebook and Instagram.
And I'm Ness Jones. I'm from Separation Anxiety in Dogs Decoded. Reach out to me on my Facebook page by the same name. You have been listening to Tales from the Doghouse, Separation Anxiety Explained. You can find us on Apple, Google, Stitcher, Spotify, and lots of other listening apps. Please like, share, and give us a 5-star review. And 21st episodes, 21st birthday, 21st episode next week. So please join us for our listener questions. We want to hear them and we want to answer them. See you then.
Bye. Thank you.